This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Hello and thanks for stopping by to download this week's film review podcast with me, Phil Williams, in for Simon Mayo and Dr. Mark Kermode. In a moment, he'll run through the box office top 10, and the films out this week include Funny Games, US, a film called Awake, Never Back Down, and a film Mark rather likes, called How She Move. But before that, Mark and I spoke to director Garth Jennings. He's written and directed the big British release of the week, which is called Son of Rambo. You'll get Mark Kermode's perspective on it in a moment. But together, we began by asking Garth how he first came to be involved in making movies. Good afternoon to Garth Jennings.
Hello.
And Mark Kermode.
Watching you do those hand signals, I thought you were voguing. You're making the international sign of the T.
No. It's all to fit in with the afternoon's racing. I've just learned tic-tac.
Good
and
work.
I was doing some tic-tac trying to find out various things. Fancy you blowing secrets, Mark Kermode. Unbelievable.
It's called the webcast. It's not a secret. It's called people being allowed to look through the internet.
Are we live now? Son of Rambo is out today. And before we get onto it, fill people in, Garth, on how you got into filmmaking, because you started off straight from art school, didn't you?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, this film is sort of based on the sort of event that really made me get interested in film in the first place, because when I was a kid, about 11 or 12 years old, I saw a sort of pirate copy of First Blood, the first Rambo movie, and it blew my mind. And me and my friends thought it was so amazing that we've made our own little home movie sequel on my dad's video
camera.
So
this is based on your life then, because I was watching it yesterday afternoon, and my girlfriend said to me, do you reckon the director actually did this?
Yeah, I did that. Not as good as they do it in the film, obviously. My life was never as exciting as it is for the kids in this film, but that's how it started, and I just kept doing that all the way through art school, left, did music videos and started doing films.
So you've done music videos for Supergrass, REM, Blur, Fatboy Slim.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of bands that I worship, and I was quite lucky to be able to do videos for them.
And then of course we saw Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yes, I did that as well. It's been busy. It's been a busy couple of years.
Well, you should explain how that came about, because it's a really good story that goes with that.
Well, it was just that I'd actually got Son of Rambo ready to make, and we were just starting the casting process, and that script just turned up on our desk. They sent it to us for our consideration.
And you were a huge fan of the TV show.
Yeah, I loved it.
Did they know that? Is that why they tied
I don't think they did, but there's a whole generation of us that grew up with this stuff, and I adored it. So it was kind of incredible, and I thought, well, I'll just leave Son of Rambo for a bit and go into space for 2 years, and it was brilliant fun. I loved it, and then came back and thought, right, we'll better do this Son of Rambo thing now.
So you were asked to storyboard that film by Hollywood?
Well, I was asked to just get in there and direct it however you do it, and the way I do it is by pretty much going through everything before we start shooting, and which means storyboarding and designing Vogons and robots and ludicrous things.
I'm always intrigued whenever directors come in, but I feel you're approachable enough to ask this question to.
Oh dear.
Is there a set way of doing it?
Is there a set way of directing?
Of directing a film?
I don't know. I don't think so.
And if so, how did you learn your way? Do you just feeling around and
just by making a hell of a lot of mistakes? Yeah, lots of mistakes. I think that's the great thing about starting young. You sort of get them out of the way. Although I'm still making them, and I'm sure I'll make a lot more. But I think it's just being confident, I suppose. Thinking that what you're doing is brilliant and that everyone must see it.
Explain, why don't we get Mark Kermode to explain the premise to Son of Rambo. You've seen it as well, I presume.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Not only have I seen it, I've seen the early film that Garth's talking about, which is Son of Aaron. Is it called Aaron?
Aaron Part One.
This is the one that they made when they were, all about three. And it is a fantastic thing. It's, secret agent stuff. And there's a marvellous moment in it when the guy who's the secret agent gets trapped in this shed, and the shed then has to catch fire, and obviously they're shooting this on home video, so the way they're going to shoot the shed on fire is that somebody has something on fire in front of the camera and the shed is in the background. But the problem is that it's all shot sequence after sequence, so they can't edit. But you can't hear anything, I think, except for the guy holding the camera going, this is just brilliant! Because it's one of those fantastic... It is absolutely brilliant. And that, I think, is the spirit that informs Son of Rambo. I'm really fond of Son of Rambo. I like it very much, which, as you know, Garth, is all the more significant since I really didn't like Hitchhikers.
You didn't like Hitchhikers?
No, I didn't either.
No, we were on DC. We only said it after I said it. But we were on a programme together, and I said to Garth, I didn't like Hitchhikers. And we had a kind of joke about it. And since then, Garth has apparently had messages from his friends saying, that Mark Kermode, we'll sort him out for you.
Really? Yeah, don't you worry. In fact, loads of people I've never met have sent like sympathy notes saying, don't you worry, that bully Kermode, we'll take him down.
Yes.
You know, and I've had to write back and say, you know, it's okay for people not to like stuff as well. That's all right. I love hitchhikers.
But that's the thing that makes my admiration for Son, in my opinion, you know, makes my admiration for Son of Rambo all the more.
Right, please explain what it's about.
It's about, the story is a young kid growing up in a religious community who don't have access to television and technology and all that sort of stuff. He's basically bullied at school by this other kid who effectively says to him, in order for me not to smash your face in, I need you to be a stuntman in this film which I'm making, which is a sequel to Rambo. And the young kid who hasn't had video and television around him is just so completely awestruck by the possibility of this stuff. I mean, first, initially he's scared, but then they form an unlikely friendship, and between them they set out to make Son of Rambo. Meanwhile, a French exchange student turns up who, in the manner of all French exchange students, is that strange mixture of incredibly exotic and absolutely totally annoying, and it's about the way in which their friendship sort of develops whilst they are making this movie, which is all their dreams, all their hopes, all their aspirations, and around them reality sort of warps because of the way in which they perceive the world. So the world comes to look like the way they see it, and it's charming and funny and edgy. And I was talking to somebody about it this morning. I was trying to sort of describe the tone of it, because it's about kids, but it's not a kids movie.
And I
ended up sort of comparing it to things like Gregory's Girl, in which they're about adolescents, but they're not aimed necessarily at that market. I mean, it's really, it's all the more charming when you see the film that Garth made, which is that film.
Garth, will that be on the DVD?
Yeah, I think I've got to put it on there, even though it's kind of ropey and rubbish. It's sort of fantastic in that we didn't see anything wrong with making a film about terrorists kidnapping the head of the Military of Defence, you know, and burning a shed in my mum's back garden.
Which particular terrorist organisation were they working for?
Oh, it was the PLO.
Because you'd heard that on the news.
Yeah, just heard it on the news. Well, that sounds good.
Yeah.
PLO.
They burned down a lot of sheds, apparently.
So this would have been early 80s.
Yeah, early 80s in Essex. So you've got a load of us going, look, we're the terrorists. So you better give us some money or we're going to, you know, make your life misery. And it's a ridiculous film. And my sister plays my 9-year-old sister was like the feisty news reporter who was, live on the scene. It was all very exciting, yeah.
Live on the scene in your back garden?
Yeah, in my back garden. Yeah.
Was there some experience of bullying in your own childhood?
No, then? This is the trouble. I had a lovely little childhood. It was, in fact, very boring for films. You wouldn't want to base any more of my life, in this film. But my next door neighbours were a Plymouth Brethren family. I lived next door to them for about 25 years. Of course, they never saw any TV or films or anything. So I figured if I moved my story next door, it became more of a film that would be interesting and fun to watch.
Mark's talked, I think, quite accurately about how it's got kids in it, but it's not necessarily a kids film.
Yeah.
Are you hoping, though, to transcend both? Are you hoping that over the Easter holes you might get kids to see this as well as adults?
Yes, I think, I mean, we always made it for everyone, but we didn't want to sort of pander to children. I remember watching a film, I remember Stand By Me. It's a classic kind of coming of age story. But it's a great movie, but the children in that smoked cigarettes, dodged trains, they did things that children shouldn't do. But we knew that as kids. You know what the right and wrong thing is to do, and I rather liked that. I remember growing up and thinking that was a great thing, and that was something we had in mind when we were making Son of Rambo. It's like, we haven't made anything outrageous or horrible, but at the same time, we haven't tried to sort of, smooth the edges off too much.
No, but it is an incredibly charming film. One of the things my girlfriend said as we were watching it is, oh, I'm so pleased it's British. About five, 6 minutes. Oh, I'm so pleased it's British. The Yanks probably couldn't do this. Do you know what she means by that?
Well, I think so. Someone was saying to me that the American movies would never have a hero kid who wasn't a go-getter. The kid in this film doesn't speak for the first 10 minutes, and they couldn't have that. He'd have to be like, hey, I got a crazy idea or something. Yeah. That was a terrible impersonation,
but also he would live in a house in which they had a home editing suite.
Yeah.
And he was connected up to the internet and could launch small missile strikes.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't happen that he just had his dad's rubbish VHS camera.
Yeah, it is interesting, but it's amazing how the Americans who've seen it have loved it. It's had the most amazing response over there.
Talk to me about the two boys that are in it that play the leads, because one I know has done a bit of stuff before, but one was totally undiscovered.
No, none of them had ever done anything.
Really?
Since we've made the film, they started doing a couple of little bits and pieces, but they never acted in it. I think one of them had been in a school play, and that was as a munchkin in Wizard of Oz.
Where did you find them?
Oh, it took ages. It was 5 months of casting, so we'd been round all the regular schools. They weren't from, the theatre schools or the stage schools. And
which area of the country did you troll in?
Oh, everywhere. It was sort of like, it was mainly the sort of south part of the country, because that's where we were, but we were starting to spread out because we were running out of time.
Because the school in the film is set where?
Oh, it was based on my own school, which was in Epping, but the one in Epping was too small when I went back to it. So we found one up in Berkhamsted called Ashlands, which is brilliant. Huge school, corridors like you remember them, like miles long.
Yeah.
And, you know, it used to be a hospital. It was great, really. It was lovely. And that whole area was great because all the rolling hills and, you know, it's how you remember your childhood.
So,
did
you audition these kids? Or, I mean, if you watch the This Is England DVD, you see how how Shane cast Thomas Turgoose.
Yeah,
it was almost very quite informal interviews, really, wasn't it? Rather than what do you think about this, what do you like about this, rather than
that had already happened with the kids we met. The casting director Susie Vickers had sat down with them and had those kind of meetings, and then by the time I met them, they'd learnt the lines.
Right.
So we had this sort of, they sort of came in and did their thing, and it was instant. You know, it was one of those. Oh yeah, you're the kid. Perfect.
Was for both of them?
Yeah, for both of them. It was that easy. I'd spent so long trying to find them that I think I was pretty sure, you know, that we'd got the right ones by the time they walked in.
What I love about these boys, and I haven't met them, right, but I've only seen the film, but what I love more is that we were hoping to speak to them today, Mark, right, but one of them's gone on a rugby tour.
Yeah.
And I just love the idea that you've got a film opening in the UK or you've got a rugby tour. I'm sorry, I'm going on a rugby tour.
Yeah, they're very down to earth. It was one of the things we loved about them was the fact they come from very solid families who aren't interested in pushing them into any kind of career in movies as such, but which means you've got very level people who are just very confident and happy to have fun.
Despite the fact that there are now images of them a mile high on every single bus in town, because I have never seen a movie so solidly advertised on large public transport
vehicles.
It is
weird. I spoke to the lead boy who's only about, was he 12 now or 13? I can't remember. And he said he was mortified because he came out of his school the other day and his school bus has got him on it now. Can you imagine what that would be like?
You'd get a lot of stick for that, wouldn't you?
A lot of stick, yeah. So he's, but he's doing well.
Stuart sent an email from Southampton. I saw Son of Rambo 2 weekends ago at the Harbour Lights in Southampton and really liked it. Great art it ain't, he says, but it has a kind of heart, soul and honesty that's missing from an awful lot of well-marketed tripe, and it's better than Hammond Tong's effort at making Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Right.
This man knows a lot.
You've got his address there.
Yeah, we've got
I can send around my people, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
You'll be getting busy in the small hours. James Taylor says, Phil and the good doctor eagerly awaiting Mark's comments on Son of Rambo, which of course we've now had, wondering if it might end up breaking the rule of terrible films being advertised on
the side
of
buses. But this is a peculiar rule because it doesn't apply. There was somebody wrote in a while ago that said, is there a correlation between films that are advertised in phone boxes and films that are advertised on the side of buses? And this was after Sex Lives of the Potato Men was advertised on the side of buses.
Oh my goodness.
And Simon was saying that he had this theory that if it's advertised on the side of a bus, it can't be. I said, but Shaun of the Dead, which is a great film, had massive bus advertising.
It was.
And of course, and was really, really funny.
Yeah.
So it does break the rule, but it's a rule I never believed in the first place.
I can only say it's marvellous and the buses are just ridiculous.
They're doing a job for you. We're going to run out of time because we've got another race coming soon. Tell us what you're working on next after this.
I don't know. It's taken me 8 years to get this made.
Wow.
I better get myself together and I've got a couple of ideas, but it's going to take me ages.
Was funding the key part to that eight-year process?
Yeah, none of the funding came from the UK. No one in the UK would finance it. That was the tricky bit.
So they'll all champion it now as a British film, but none of them
absolutely.
Give
it's
you
like
cash.
Pro-British, but yeah, we weren't there behind you when you were trying to get the film made.
Go, British film industry.
Go.
It's like the English Patient, though, isn't it? You know, English Patient financed by Americans because we went, nah.
Yeah, it's a tough one out there, but you know, now it's made, I don't care. It's great.
Garth, absolute pleasure having you in.
Thank you for having me.
I'm not saying this because he'll tell you that if I didn't like it, I'd just keep my mouth shut. But we really enjoyed this film yesterday afternoon when we both saw it, so I hope it goes well for you this week.
On DAB Digital Radio, digital TV, downloads and online.
This is 5Live.
Dr. Mark Kermode made his way back into the studio for the week's movie releases and the top 10 box office films, and a whole pile of emails to put to you, including one from Seamus in Hartford.
Hello, Seamus in Hartford.
On a romantic break in York, my girlfriend and I visited the local independent cinema, as recommended by
excellent,
you,
well done.
Before heading out for a romantic dinner. The choice was The Other Berlin Girl or The Orphanage. My girlfriend was raving towards period drama, but I remember that Mark had said Berlin was, it was alright, and The Orphanage was great, but I couldn't remember why. Now, my girlfriend isn't good in films that make you jump.
Oh.
She even jumped during Vantage Point. So, blindly, I pressed the case to see Mark's recommendation. I came out of the movie with what felt like a perforated eardrum and a crushed hand. Over dinner, we agreed it was a great movie, but perhaps in future I should remember why Mark recommends certain types of film.
I did actually say that when I saw that film first time in Cannes, it was about a year ago, and the person sitting next to me, I didn't know them because it was a packed screening. On four separate occasions, they went, and they grabbed my arm, and I came out with like literally, you know, fingernail marks in my forearm from somebody I'd never met before. That to me is the mark of a genuinely good horror film. You grab the person next to you, even if you don't know them, and they're probably from another country.
Dr. Mark Kermode back here, and it's Phil Williams in for Simon. He's not here today because he's accepting an award, which I would have thought you'd have been there with him. I mean, you're integral to this man's success.
Please tell him that. And I, you know, I'm not even sure what award it is that he's winning, but I'm sure it won't be half the award it could have been had he not been hoisting me upon his shoulders at the same time. No, it's something quite special, isn't it?
It is. It's the Broadcasting Press Guild Awards, and he's been named Radio Broadcaster of the Year for this show.
By Anglers Weekly. That's great. I mean, it's really...
Anyway, the good doctor is here, so let's do the top 10 box office films, because we've got another race to sneak in just before quarter to four. At 10, The Orphanage, which we know you like.
Yes.
At 9, The Game Plan.
Which, as I said, I haven't seen, but we've been asking for reviews from our listeners, and I have yet to find a review of somebody who wholeheartedly endorsed it. It looks like it's a bit of an average movie at very best.
Disney film with The Rock. At 8, Vantage Point.
Yeah, I mean, as was said by that previous email, somebody jumped in the middle of it. I didn't find it very surprising. It's kind of a modern day Rashomon in which we get to the attempted assassination of a president scene from several different angles. It works for about half an hour, then it runs out of steam and turns into Groundhog Day with car chases.
10,000 BC's at 7.
It's like those movies that you would have seen when you were a teenager, you know, 1 million years BC and all the rest of it, except it lacks the sort of lovely innocent charm. It has more CGI, less plot, and the attack of the giant emu sequence is particularly hard to get bothered by.
The joy is that we are getting closer to sea, aren't we? We had 1 million years BC, now 10,000 years BC.
Sorry.
It's getting closer. The number's coming down.
Oh, you mean C,
Numeric.
BC?
Yeah.
I see. I beg your pardon. See, we're getting nearer to C. What? Are we all drifting? the oceans are rising. For those of us who live down in Southampton, that's a worrying prospect. It's always a particularly erudite comment there. I'm sorry, just completely went over my head. Anyway.
Don't worry.
Moving on, as any fool knows.
6, Meet the Spartans.
Which, no jokes in Meet the Spartans that weren't originally in, you know, the original 300, but once they run out of steam by saying, hey, those Spartans, they're all a bit camp, aren't they? They just start doing really, really unfunny jokes about American Idol and comedians you won't have heard of and gags that aren't funny, and it is just dreadful. And it stars him out of EastEnders, who apparently is now, you know, making a big splash in the movie. Because the worst thing about it was, it very briefly went to number one in America, and it cost thrumpence, and it took flumpence, which is right. More than thrumpence. Right. So that means they'll make another one, you know.
Him out of EastEnders, he means Tegs from Grange Hill as well, if you're even younger.
Tegs from Grange Hill?
Yeah, he was Tegs in Grange Hill.
Was he? I'm amazed that you remember that. How old are you?
33.
Isn't that out of your memory radar?
No, because what happened was, obviously I was part of the Tucker Jenkins generation, and then Tegs was
Tucker's
after
luck.
That. And what happened was, I, instead of growing up and doing what you should do, I carried on watching Grange Hill.
Oh, I see, fine.
So you just matured later.
Okay, that's what it is.
5, Drillbit Taylor.
Rubbish.
4, Horton Hears a Who.
Kermode Hears a Why. Boom.
3, The Spiderwick Chronicles,
which I like very much. And in fact, funnily enough, I was talking to a friend's kid about it, just at Connor, who said that he's read all the books, and he was describing the books to me, and it sounded very much like what's in the books, which I haven't read, is pretty much what's up there on screen. Very good.
At 2, fittingly, Step Up to the Streets.
The Streets, yeah. Well, we've also got, you know, How She Moved today, and I know you're down with the homies.
Massively.
And obviously you bust them a move, don't you?
Mate, I've got so many lyrics I'm frightened to use them.
Really? Okay, well then it's a film for you.
At number 1, 27 Dresses.
Which is nothing like as funny as it ought to be, because Catherine Hagel is a funny enough comedian, but it's just, it's a film that makes The Devil Wears Prada look positively incisive and edgy, and it's just a kind of damp squib, perfectly alright, totally innocuous. If you had to take somebody to go and see something, it wouldn't offend anybody, except that it's just so bland.
A bit of a beef then to pick up with you. Last week you and I were broadcasting together, and I said there's only been one good film out this year, Juno. You said you haven't seen There Will Be Blood or No Country for Old Men, so on Saturday night I watched No Country for Old Men.
Oh yeah.
Rubbish. Hated it. Didn't care about the guy and his money. Didn't care about the hitman. It's too long. It's a classic Oscar film. It's beautifully shot. Looks great, but it's got no plot. They love it, these Academy people. What's the matter with them?
You see, there should be, you know, you should do this. That Citizen Kane, what's all that about? It's just a bloke in a sledge, isn't it? That Gone with the Wind, what's all that? It's just some woman standing looking at a sunset going, tomorrow's another day. That Wizard of Oz is some flying woman, somebody on a broomstick and a talking scarecrow. What's all that about? I saw that Titanic. Boat sinks. What's so clever about that? Well, you'd be right about Titanic. I mean, there is really no way with arguing with somebody who says, There Will Be Blood. Sorry, it's rubbish.
No, not that one. No Country for Old Men.
No Country for Old Men. Yeah. Have you seen There Will Be Blood?
No, but
see, now I don't want
but
you
now
to.
But now I'm worried about it.
Now you'll go and see There Will Be Blood. You go, I saw that There Will Be Blood. It's just a bunch of oil, that is. What's all that about? It's just some bloke in a hat with some oil.
But there's no plot to No Country for Old Men. He goes around, kills a few people.
Yeah, there's a massive amount of plot. It's all about the... Well, it's about the question of declining civilization and whether or not civilization is worse than it seemed to be or whether it's just an illusion of getting old.
And my review was seem to back that up.
What, that it is?
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, okay. I just... There's a point after which argument stops and shouting begins, and I think we're very close to that point, really.
Anyway, the point is you owe me an hour and a half.
I owe you an hour and a half?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you see There Will Be Blood, I'm going to owe you 2.5 hours. So why don't we round it up to 4 and I'll take you out for a meal?
All right, perfect.
As long as you can see a film afterwards.
Okay, yeah, no, we'll do that.
That'd be a cheap date.
Yeah, I'm up for that.
Okay, fine.
Funny Games US is your first release this week. Tell us about Funny Games US and why they've tagged US onto it.
Because it's an American remake of Michael Haneke, Austrian filmmaker Michael Haneke's film that he made in German language in 1997. Did you see the first Funny Games?
No.
Okay, here's the thesis. Funny Games is a film about how we all love violence. It's very bad and you shouldn't be enjoying the cinematic violence. I'm going to give you a lesson in how bad it is. There's a couple and their kid and a dog, and they go to a holiday home, and these two kids turn up, two young men turn up dressed in tennis whites and surgical gloves. They then proceed to terrorise, torture and basically exterminate the family whilst all the time looking at the camera and going, yes, this is what you want, isn't it? Because this is entertainment. This is what... And it's a thesis, it's a comment. It is basically like being told off for 2 hours. You're very
I've
bad
seen the
people.
Trailer for this now.
Fine.
And it's Naomi Thingy, isn't it?
In Naomi Watts, yes, I knew it said Naomi Campbell. It's Naomi Watts in the American remake. In the original, it's Suzanne Lothair and Arno Frisch, who I think was more terrifying. But it is like being lectured. So now, Michael Haneke said the problem with the film was, you see, it was seen by the wrong people. It's made for the American audience. They're also sick. And now they didn't see it because it's in German language. So he's decided to remake the film shot for shot, but in English, with Naomi Watts and Tim Roth. Here's a clip.
If you don't let me see your wound, I can't help you. I'm sorry I hurt you, but you forced me to, you must admit.
Mr. Farber, be reasonable. Let him look at your leg. He can help you with it.
Would you please... leave? Please. We won't get anywhere like this.
You have to let him help you. You don't really have a choice. You're the ship's captain, sir. You're aware that on board, the captain's word is law, aren't you? So what do you want to do? You want to call someone? An ambulance or the police? I won't stop you. Neither will Tom. Right, Tom? Well, what are you waiting for?
He dropped the cell phone in the sink.
Why are you doing this? Why not?
And that's pretty much the most lively, jolly and upbeat part in the film. Now, the whole point about the original film was that they wanted the audience to suffer. They don't actually show you the on-screen violence. The on-screen violence happens off-screen and then you see the results of it. And it is a really horrible film. I mean, really, genuinely horrible. I speak as a big fan of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I mean, it's a really horrible, uncomfortable experience. But it's also a really annoying experience because it is like being hectored. It is like being lectured. It is like being spoken down to from a great height by somebody who has great moral superiority over you, and you really should know. You're a very bad person for wanting to see this stuff, and consequently I'm going to make you have a really, really bad time. The first time round in German, I saw it in Cannes, right? So there I'm being lectured by an Austrian in France, which of course for me is the perfect storm of being lectured. Now, in English, exactly the same film, the theory being in Michael Haneke's head that the problem with it the first time round was it was in the wrong language and the American audience didn't see it because it's... No, the problem with it is not that it's in the wrong language, Michael. The problem with it is very few people will spend money to spend 2 hours being told off. It's like... He's saying, oh, well, nowadays, you know, there's all this torture porn, debatable thing anyway, there's all this torture porn and everyone goes in to see these movies because they like to see violence. They need to understand that this is wrong and this is... You know what? Hey, fine, great. You know, I've had plenty of fun hours in the cinema over the years enjoying gratuitous explosions, violence, nonsense. You know, I'm own up. I enjoy horror films. I've also seen horror films like Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, or indeed Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which do a very interesting thing about turning the camera back on the audience and making you think about your own complicity and all this stuff. Fine, had all that done. Difference was, I didn't feel like they were just standing over there giving me a detention. I didn't feel like I'd just been given lines by a professor who was just really, really cross with me and thought that, you know, everything that I'm enjoying. Now, the weird thing about Haneke is Haneke went on from this to make some really good films like The Piano Teacher, which is very tough, and Cachet, Hidden, which is a huge international hit. Demonstrated real maturity, real grasp of human characters, real, you know, substance. To go back to Funny Games 10 10 years later and just do, I mean, literally shot for shot, there is something really Vorsprung durch Technik about this.
Is there not some, a little bit of hypocrisy to this as well? Because if this, if the original idea of this film, as you say, is a thesis to lecture the audience
about how horrible all this stuff is,
they do it by making a horrible film.
No, but they, but you don't see, see, this is what he's saying. Ah,
but you see the results.
You walked into
it.
That film.
But no, but you see the results.
It's horrible.
It.
No, yeah. You see the art, you see the pain on everyone else's face. So what he's saying is, I am denying you the cathartic spectacle of enjoyable violence. I am instead making you suffer.
But the point I was going to make to you is, he's remade it shot for shot.
Yes.
Right? You feel lectured to again for
again,
a second time.
Yeah, so I'm
but he's
the
winner.
Man.
He's the winner because he's making all the cash.
Yeah, although I have to say, there's not a huge winnings here because I suspect that the box office potential of Funny Games US is no more substantial than the box office potential of Funny Games. Because, you know, the problem is not that it's in the wrong language. The problem is it's like being told off for 2 hours. And I mean, and there's a, the other thing was, all the way through the movie, the characters turn, they address the camera. And it's like, you know, hey, you audience, what are you doing there? Why don't you just leave? Fine, off you go then. It's like, you know, I know how this argument goes. You know, it's so for me, like being told off. For other people, like, I mean, it is horrible. It is genuinely horrible. If you have 2 hours free and you think, I really want to come out of that subsequent 2 hours feeling like I am the most hideous creature on the planet and life is just rotten in ways I'd never imagined, go see Funny Games. Otherwise, you know what, get Texas Chainsaw Massacre out on video. It's a lot funnier.
An email for you from Denise and Wendy in Sao Paulo, right? We're always cautious, we try to be prepared. Last night, however, we and four other people were mugged. We went to the cinema, we were caught completely off guard. We were not actively thermo.
What was it?
Last night by a long shot was I'm Not There, the Bob Dylan film.
Oh no!
Don't feel we were
No. And
especially
suddenly
as
my
the title
sympathy
lends
was
itself
lost.
To a film that we weren't there either. It's the biggest load of pretentious crap we've seen in a long, long time. Easily the worst film we can remember seeing. Please alert other unsuspecting listeners who may be caught likewise when this gets its DVD.
The interesting opinions is that obviously we all have them, and everyone thinks that theirs is right and everyone else is wrong. The difference is mine is right and everyone else is slightly off me. The thing is, I'm a defender of Todd from the very early days. I was like, oh, the person who really loved Velvet Goldmine when it was getting kicked around in the music press. All I can tell you is, I really like his work. Best thing is, it's like a kind of montage or a collage. He throws everything at the screen, and there's bits of it that work and bits of it that don't. And I've seen the film a few times now, and it, every time you see it, different bits of it work. But he's adventurous. He's to do something biopic form. And the fact is, it's big Bob Dylan. I mean, it'd be impossible to make a film about Bob Dylan that wasn't pretentious. Let's be honest. It's Bob Dylan, for heaven's sake. But I love the movie. Sorry, you need to go and see it again and get your head around it. Can I just say, incidentally, because I just looked at the BBFC's verdict on Funny Games US. This is a lovely phrase. I love the way the BBFC, they say that it's sustained terrorization, strong sense of threat, sadism, humiliation, right? Which is all those things that you said it contains. But then it says at the end, there is also a clear sense, however, in which we as viewers are being chastised for relishing screen violence. Exactly what it is. That's from the sense that there is a sense we're all being, not only has it got all this stuff that you're having to endure, but you're being chastised at the same time. It's, you know, how would you not have £7 and 2 hours free? I shall go and be chastised and made to feel really wretched, or I'll go and do something else.
The other major film of the week is called Awake, but I don't want to set you off on that ramble and then we have to interrupt you for thing. So is there another film you can do that's shorter?
Well, we can very quickly have a look at How She Move, which is, you know, the
film that seems to me to lack a verb.
Yeah, I think that's because you're not down with the kids
in the
streets. I believe that's the case. I mean, you know, I live in the New Forest, so what do I know? So the story is, there's a girl, her sister has tragically departed. She has got to go back to her old school because of financial stuff. She didn't want to be at the old school, bad neighbourhood. Starts hanging out with some people, and they're kind of in these dance troupes, and they think that maybe she could get there. She doesn't want to go in the dance troupe, but she does want to go in there. She hangs out with them, and then she finds that if she becomes the first female member of the dance troupe, that she will get some money, and blah, 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 blah. And then and they all dance. And they all dance. And in the moments when they're all dancing, he's like, fine. And in the moments when everything else is happening, it's like, you know, I'd love to see one of those films in which the moral message just wasn't writ so large. Because the message is, you know, study, do all the right stuff. Those bits are just totally boring and dull. And the other bits, it's just a collection of MTV pop videos of people charging around in extremely athletic fashion in a way which I'm sure would be entertaining to me if I cared about dance or understood modern popular music, which I don't. It does have a slightly gritty edge. I mean, it has the sort of, there's a suggestion they want it to be gritty. But in the end, it's a bunch of people jumping up and down.
Poor man's kids from fame, it sounds like to me. Phil Williams here with you for a Friday afternoon in for Simon Mayer, who by now should have accepted his award for Radio Broadcaster
and
of the
thanked
Year.
Thanked us lavishly.
At the annual Broadcasting Press Guild Award. So congratulations once more to Simon. Awake!
Well, since we've got 4 minutes left, let's try and do Awake and Never Back Down. No clips, just going through. So Awake, okay. Apparently, according to the tagline, 700 people awake every year during surgery. Right, OK, so Hayden Christensen, he's got a heart condition. He's going to have a heart transplant. He's going out with Jessica Alba because Kate Bosworth dropped out of the movie. But his mad mum, played by Lena Olin, who took the role after Sigourney Weaver said no, says that he shouldn't because she's obviously a bad one and she wants the operation to be done by her very, very rich surgeon friend. He, however, wants the operation to be done by his downbeat surgeon friend, and his downbeat surgeon friend who teaches him fishing and keeps saying, you know, you've got to have this operation done and I'm the man to do it, and he's played by Terrence Howard. What then happens is the operation happens, and during the operation, Hayden Christensen experiences anesthetic awareness or anesthesia. So basically, they're operating, but he's awake. He can't move. He can't open his eyes. Go. So look, the movie's rubbish, but let's just do all the gags. Okay, fine. You know, 700 people awake during surgery, which is more than you're going to be able to do during this film. Hayden Christensen is completely paralysed and comatose. But hey, how would you know? His mind is still active. Again, previous gag as before. The script was clearly written by somebody under the influence of severe and anaesthetic induced. It is one of those films in which he's lying on the slab. He's awake. The stuff's happening around him. Conspiracy theory starts. And you think, okay, one of three things is true. Either I'm dreaming all of this, and you pinch yourself. No, I can feel that. I am genuinely awake. Or he's dreaming it all. Sadly, that doesn't turn out to be true. Or the world really, really has gone to hell in a handbag, and I think the third of those is true. I mean, it is unintentionally funny in ways that it doesn't possibly imagine. And actually, the whole thing about people waking up under anaesthetic is just a tiny little MacGuffin to allow the most ridiculous plot to play its way. It is dumb as nuts, and you would have to be anaesthetised not to see the end coming a long time before it does. Now, also out this week, Never Back Down, which is basically Junior Fight Club. You remember Fight Club? So we got Sean Faris, who's been cast because he's Tom Cruise. Well, he's not. He's obviously younger and cheaper than Tom Cruise. And he's a bad boy in a bad town. He needs to go to a new town because he's got into so many fights before he has to go to a new town. So he goes to a new town. He's got a dead father. That's the thing that's in the background. He goes to a new town and he meets Amber Heard, who is clearly Jessica Alba, except she's younger and cheaper, and they couldn't get Jessica Alba, so they get her. And she is going out with a guy who kind of looks a bit like Brad Pitt, except he's younger and cheaper than Brad Pitt. And he does the Fight Club thing, and she wants to get the new guy to fight with the old guy so that then they can have a fight off and she can stand around in a bikini while the men beat each other up. Now, in order to be able to do the fight, he goes to see Jimon Hounsou, who is basically playing the role of, you know, the guy out of The Karate Kid. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
And also a little bit of Lou Gossett Jr. in An Officer and a Gentleman. And he teaches him how to fight. And the words of the movie, the words coming out of it, fighting is very bad, mustn't do fighting, fighting is very bad. But the visuals of the movie are going, look at these guys with their shirts off and they're having a wrestling match and the women are all standing around in bikinis. And the words of the movie are saying love, peace, harmony, tenderness.
Yeah, and the trailers are very glossy and very...
It's basically, you know, Triumph of the Will for tweenies. I mean, it is. It's just completely right. Sort of fascist-minded bodies, you know, everyone. Let's beat everybody up, but then let's say, hey, you know what? We are the world.
So if you had to have a film of the week this week, what would it be?
Son of Rambo, which obviously we had Garth in before, which is why we didn't do it again. If you tuned in at 3 o'clock, sorry you missed that, but it'll be on the podcast. And Funny Games, the most fun you can't have in the cinema.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.